and welcome to my hearth.
I think it's important to remember that my podcast is called Creative Storytelling, and to a certain extent, it's trying to fill in the gaps between things that I can't remember about the village that has made me realise that some of the things I might say could be untrue. To quote Queen Elizabeth II, recollections may differ. I wouldn't like you to think that I'm deliberately lying to you about what happened when I was a little boy. It's just understanding that because this is 60 years ago, my brain isn't working as good as it might be in the recall area. The brain is very selective, and I have to say I have better memories of the northern part of my youth than of the southern part. Certain things are extremely vivid, and other things are a complete blank. I like to think I can remember highlights, or perhaps I've wiped out any traumatic events. But in this episode, I want to consider the village on fete, or rather the village on carnival. What was so special about it was that it was one of the rare events where the entire village took part, or were at least interested. The others were the local regatta, because so many people in the village had boats and sailed, and also the flower and produce show, because of course everybody in those days grew things in their gardens. The competition in these events paled into insignificance compared with the leek shows in the north, where rivalry and possible murder reigned supreme. The idea of carnival allows me to introduce you to some more villages, but more of that in a moment. Remember, I had an older sister, and she too became involved in these gargantuan events. She was very dark and very pretty, and so it was obvious that she should appear at some point in the carnival as Snow White. She must have been 10 or 11 at the time, perhaps even a little bit older. I played one of her dwarfs. Because I was bright, I was allocated Doc. Everyone was obsessed with the Disney version of the story, and so we were made to look like those particular cartoon characters. Our clothes were all made of crepe paper, which was fine in the summer, but actually didn't withstand the rigours of the carnival procession. We had crepe hair, eyebrows and beards, and little hats. My sister Mandy looked absolutely amazing as Snow White, and I think we won some kind of prize. In terms of effort, everyone really did put 100% in. There was some discussion about one of the girls who appeared as Fry's Turkish Delight, which was a very popular advert on the television at that time, featuring a young lady full of Eastern promise. And it was obvious that her mum had bought her some kind of costume. It was of professional standard. However, the judges decided that the effort was worth its reward. That year, she won it. I think she then tried to appear in the same costume for subsequent years, and I don't know that she always won. However, it was a very beautiful outfit, and I'm sure it encouraged my love of the exotic, or at least of Turkish delight. Now remember, we're dealing with the 1950s, which were not at all politically correct. I have a photograph of me one year as a black and white minstrel. That was one of the most popular programmes on television on Saturday night. And you couldn't do it now. I'm not sure you could have done it then, really. However, everybody loved it. And it's interesting in the circularity of life that one of my best friends in later life was Ruth Maddock, and she'd started her career in the Black and White Minstrels. Now, whilst we're still on the theme of political correctness, I must mention another of my famous starring roles in the carnival. And this introduces us to one of my mum's best friends. And that was the lady who was the local postmistress, who was called Beatty. She was born with a condition which at the time was called dwarfism. And before you ask, no, she didn't appear as one of Snow White's companions. They were all children. I was fascinated by the fact that when she ran her post office, she stood on a little platform so that she was available over the top of the counter. She was one of my favourite people in the village because she was extremely patient and really kind. You can imagine that in an Essex village, especially if you're having to deal with money, you needed the patience of a saint. The post office was one of the hubs of the local village because everybody needed to go there for various things, including a savings account. In those days, very few people had a bank account. Obviously, my dad did, but that was because he was paid from Switzerland. But mostly, people kept their money in the post office savings account. And you literally had a little book that you took to the post office, and if you paid any money in, it was entered in the book by Beatty. At a certain point each year, your interest was calculated, and that was also added in the book. You used it to save up for special treats. And also, you might be given a postal order, which is a way of people sending you money. They went and bought one at the post office, and you could then cash it in another post office. Those of you who love the play The Winslow Boy by Terence Rattigan will know the perils of unsolicited postal orders. I had a post office book, and I did regular savings for anything that I might want. My father heartily approved of my having a post office account because he thought it got me to understand the value of money. Remember that in those days, my great love was paperback books, but you could buy one for 2 shillings and 6p, 12.5p in new money or 0.5 crown in old money. I kept that post office savings account going until I went to university, where at that particular time we had to have a bank account for our grants to be paid into it. So for me as a little boy, Beatty was always connected with hidden treasure. She was the keeper of the post office savings accounts. Not only that, I love the fact that she travelled around on a little bicycle. I'm assuming that it was a child's bicycle because it accommodated her legs. I can honestly say that I never saw her grumpy or upset. She was always smiling and beaming and so patient and helpful. Whoever came to her counter, nothing was too difficult for her, and she would help everybody with whatever they wanted to do. In those days, everybody sent parcels to each other for Christmas, and she managed those with huge skill and sympathy. She would always remind people whose relatives lived abroad the date that they needed to send parcels for various events, like Christmas. She would help people fill in forms, and she was very good at deciphering envelopes so that the postman knew exactly who needed to receive a gift. Now, I said she played a major role in my carnival triumphs, and as you can imagine, because of her looks, she was very good at playing certain roles. And this particular year, it was decided by, I think, my mum and her, that I was going to appear as Noddy, and she was going to appear as Big Ears. I had the most amazing outfit made for me by one of my aunts, my Aunt Chris, and Beatty herself looked marvellous as Big Ears. Everybody took our photographs, and we, of course, won a prize. Now, whilst I say it was life-changing, there's another part to this. I was very tiny for my age, and I was very good-looking, and I did look good as Noddy, and as a result, I was given by some of my uncles the nickname of Nod. And that nickname of Noddy stayed with me as long as they lived, which was certainly into my late 30s. There was another reason for this particular appellation, and that was because when I was little, I was quite shy, and I did occasionally just answer with a nod. As I say, I really left the village when I was 11, so I lost contact with Little Beatty, as we called her, but I know that my mum and her remained really strong friends. Now, I mentioned my Aunt Chris there, who made my outfit, and I should say that, like most of my aunties at that particular time in the village, she wasn't a real aunt, but she was a close friend of my mum's, and they lived in the same road. I was fascinated by her house, which really did look like a fairy tale little cottage, and also the fact that she was a seamstress of incredible skill and could literally make anything. She had a treadle sewing machine, which I think she used with marathon ability. Her sewing workroom looked like something from a Beatrix Potter drawing, with bolts of cloth and scraps and scissors all over the place. She would be the most amazing character in a story. Again, very kind and very patient. She would be a great character in a Noel Coward drama, probably this Happy Breed, with some kind of secret sorrow which I never knew anything about. I just knew that she'd never managed to get married, but was always terribly moved at weddings, and was always the one who cried the most, especially if she'd helped to dress the bride. I used to visit her and watch her work. I was fascinated by it. And she encouraged me in understanding how garments were made. And later, when I became involved in making costumes for plays and for performances, I always remembered Aunt Chris and how she would approach a task. Now, I'll talk about her sister, my amazing Aunt Rose, in the next episode.